Hello, everyone. This is Stephen Strang, and welcome to the Strang Report podcast. I am so honored today to be able to interview the owner and CEO of none other than the Babylon Bee. So we're going to find out all about humor and satire and all that kind of stuff, but we're also going to talk about cancel culture, because there's some people who apparently have no sense of humor and never heard of satire. And we're going to hear about it today with Seth Dillon. So stay tuned to my conversation about cancel culture as it relates to the Babylon Bee.
Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
Welcome back, everyone, and thank you, Seth, for taking time to talk to me about my book. I just thought this was a very interesting aspect. Of course, I hope we talk about other things too, but just full disclosure for my listeners, I want them to know I'm a huge fan of the Babylon Bee, and I think you guys do great work. I'm old enough to remember the Wittenberg door. You probably don't remember the Wittenberg door, but back in the day, in fact, I always cringed. I always hoped that the Wittenberg door did not make fun of me. I thought I never wanted to do something so stupid that they make fun of me. And but that was long before the days of the internet, and of course now with apps and everything else. So first of all, welcome. And then I know that you didn't start the Babylon Bee, you bought it. So maybe that's the first question, is why would an entrepreneur buy something like the Babylon Bee?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, thanks for being a fan. Appreciate that. I bought it because I was a fan too. I loved it. The Bee was really, back when I was first becoming acquainted with it in probably, I guess, 2017, my friends were sharing the articles and they were circulating and sometimes going viral. And, you know, it was just this really sharp, snarky, witty and biting humor. And it was refreshing to see, because there wasn't really anyone doing that on the right. You know, the conservative side of the aisle, especially from a Christian perspective, it was very unique. And its uniqueness was really filling a void, I think, and connecting with a really large audience that was hungry for content like that. So I approached it really just as a fan initially. And then when I ended up working at a deal where I acquired it, that was just, you know, it was kind of a little dream come true, because I've always loved satire. I've loved humor and satire, and to be a part of an operation like this was kind of exciting. And it's definitely the most fun thing I do in my day-to-day routine at this point. That's for sure.
Well, you make a lot of people laugh, and you're right. There's not a whole lot of humor in the churches. A lot of people that take themselves too seriously.
Correct. Yeah.
And, you know, with humor, it's like all the late night shows and The Onion and all those. And of course, they tend to be very, very left wing. They make fun in what I consider to be demeaning, or at least usually it's demeaning, way of the right, or really anybody that's, you know, right of center. And and you don't. In fact, you kind of take jabs at both sides. And I went online and read a bunch of stuff about you guys, and a bunch on the left think that jabbing at the left is something you shouldn't do, and making fun of Joe Biden because he stayed awake through the whole debate is kind of off limits. There's so many examples that could be used. Maybe you could tell me and my listeners a couple of the crazier examples of where you guys have really gotten in hot water, even being deplatformed in some instances.
Well, yeah, that's like you mentioned that comment about Joe Biden. I'm not sure where you read that, but it's very common for people on the left to be very, very happy to dish it, but very unhappy to take it. And, you know, what Trump went through, what Bush went through, you know, the kind of vilification and smears and, you know, Trump was compared to Hitler every day for years. So, you know, it's just amazing to see them bristle so much.
But that wasn't satire. They meant that.
Right. Yeah. They meant it. Yeah. But yeah, I think what's happened with us, where we've gotten in some hot water, as you put it, is just these cases where sometimes, you know, we do, like you said, take jabs at both sides. We have targets, Republicans and conservatives and even Christians. You know, there's a lot of self-deprecating humor, and we're willing to poke at ourselves and laugh at ourselves. And that's really kind of the whole point of satire, is to beyond just the broader point of ridiculing bad ideas and confronting, you know, hypocrisy and everything, is to get ourselves to not take ourselves so seriously, which is a very big problem in today's world. So the left struggles with they love to ridicule, they love to use mockery. They're very good at those things. Historically, they are. Their comedy is dying right now, though, for a number of reasons, in large part because there are so many things that they've put beyond the bounds where you're not allowed to talk about them, you're not allowed to joke about them. They're restricting speech so much it's starting to affect even their own comedy. But yeah, we've gotten into a couple of situations where they will basically, they consider if we joke too much about targets they don't like, then they start saying things like, oh, are these people really a satire site, or are they a misinformation outlet that's just trying to deceive people on purpose?
In fact, Snopes seems to hate you guys. I mean, yeah. It's almost like they can't take a joke. Things that to me were just so obvious that you were making fun of something, they'd say, oh, this is fake news.
Yeah, well, that was the first incident we had, was with Snopes. You know, they fact-checked the most ridiculous story ever about how CNN had purchased industrial-sized washing machines to spin the news before publication. And it was just an absurd joke, a really silly joke. And they fact-checked that, and we almost got kicked off Facebook for it because we were spreading fake news at a time when Facebook was really cracking down on fake news. So, you know, we ended up in a battle with Snopes back and forth where they kept doing fact checks one after another, and their fact checks were always filled with this language that was implying that we were actually deceiving people on purpose. And so we confronted them about that.
How could they do with the washing machine? It was a joke on the word spin. And of course, we all think CNN spins the news. You know, the right probably spins the news the other direction. But fact check that there's not a washing machine at CNN. I mean, you know, it almost seems idiotic to me.
It is, yeah. Well, and that's the thing, is some of these things that they fact check, we recently were fact checked for a piece, well, it wasn't that recent, I guess, around shortly after Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death, we did a piece about how the Ninth Circuit Court had overturned her death. And it was just such a silly concept. You know, how do you overturn someone's death? But USA Today fact-checked that one. That was funded by Facebook, and they cited 15 sources to refute that joke. So it's really incredible that we're at a place in time where jokes are no longer funny or not. They're true or false, and we're giving them a truth rating. And it's the jokes that they don't like that they rate false, so that they can treat the person who made the joke as if they're a dangerous source of disinformation. And that's what's happening with us.
You know, one that I remember was actually, you took a jab at a friend of mine, Joel Osteen. I've known Joel 35 years, maybe, since he was running camera in his dad's ministry. And you made a joke about him going when Houston flooded after, you know, one of the really bad hurricanes. There's so many, I can't even remember which one. Maybe it was Katrina. And he was going
Hurricane Harvey.
Harvey, that was the one that dumped so much rain, wasn't it? And that he was going through in his yacht, handing out copies of Your Best Life Now. Well, yeah, I know, Joel. Actually, he has a pretty good sense of humor. But, I mean, so I guess they could fact check, no, he didn't go out of his yacht and he didn't hand out copies of his book. He wanted you to go on Amazon and buy one, you know, I mean.
Right.
It's like satire. They probably would have fact-checked Mark Twain.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, all through history. So
satire is effective, and that's really what it comes down to. Satire is so effective. I love this quote by G.K. Chesterton. He said, humor can get in under the door while seriousness is still fumbling at the handle. And that's just a beautiful way of putting it, that, you know, humor is disarming. People let their guard down when they're joking and laughing about things. And in the social media age, they're more likely to share things that are humorous than very serious and argumentative and are going to cause them to lose friends. So it's just super effective. And so it's one of the first things that they go after, is saying that they need to stop when it's being effectively used as a tool against them.
Well, how have you come against this counterculture? Because you're still out there. They haven't been able, I guess, when it becomes apparent how stupid this is, they backtrack. Am I right?
Yeah, well, so far we've had a lot of success by drawing a lot of media attention to these incidents, you know, where we get accused of misinforming people. We've been called a far-right misinformation site by the New York Times. They said that we trafficked in misinformation. Brian Stelter at CNN said that we're a fake satire site, whatever that means. So, you know, we bring media attention to this stuff, and we mock it and ridicule it, and we'll write satirical pieces about them. And the attention that it generates usually results in them kind of backing off or correcting what they said. Snopes changed their entire fact-checking system as a result of their interaction with us. They no longer rate satirical pieces as false. They rate them as satire, which should have been how they handled them in the first place. Because we're not making truth claims. That's the whole thing. They start treating satire like it's making a claim about something. Satire doesn't make claims. It does make a point, but it does so using fabricated false stories. And that's just what satire is. So it falls outside the purview of fake news, which is intended to mislead. But they're trying to make it fit into that. So we fought back very successfully just by making a lot of noise about it, making people aware of how ridiculous it is that they're trying to mischaracterize us like this. And it's very deliberate, clearly, what they're doing.
When you talked about Brian Stelter, I remember, I think it was Sean Hannity who called him Humpty Dumpty. And so they're probably going to go on and prove that, no, he's never been Humpty Dumpty. But I guess he was just...
He's never sat on a wall.
Yeah. I guess he was just poking fun at him, which, you know, with public officials or celebrities or people in the media, like Brian is, of course, he dishes it out. I mean, just... You know, the things he said about you is an example, but then they can't take it, and they're so thin-skinned. You know, over the years, I've been covering the charismatic movement, which sometimes takes itself too seriously, but sometimes we'll make jokes about charismaniacs or cruise-o-matics, that people cruise from church to church. But, you know, we're not really into humor. People would not understand if we tried to do that. So I'm glad there's someone like the Babylon Bee out there. And my wife, who has a great sense of humor, is all the time sharing your stuff with me. I almost don't need to go on your app because she keeps me abreast of what's going
on. That's great.
But let's cycle back around to the cancel culture. Do you think that that's a way that we can kind of deconstruct and disempower the left by just kind of poking at how hypocritical it is? You know, like the Women's March, where you said that they could prove 100% that all the people, the Women's March, had not been aborted. You know, you're making fun of the fact that they just take abortion for granted, but yet their mothers had not aborted them. I thought it was a very humorous way to kind of make that subtle point, or maybe I missed the point. I don't know, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's in a very effective way. Like I said, humor is super effective. Satire is very effective. But, you know, cancel culture, the way that we're facing cancel culture is a little bit unique. You know, typically the way that cancel culture works, and you know, you're doing a book on this, so you know you're studying these instances and what's going on. But from what I see, typically the way it works is somebody says something that they shouldn't say. You know, they have some kind of, you know, some tweet or something that they that was regrettable that made them look bad, and you know a mob forms to get them fired from their job because of what they said. And then next thing you know the company acquiesces and fires the person, and there you go. They're canceled. The mob got what they wanted. And my own experience, I had a speaking engagement canceled because a Twitter mob formed and didn't want me coming to the campus. So, you know, that's typically what happens. In our case, it's a little bit different. They can't just cancel us because of something that we've said. You know, we're a humor site. We're an entertainment site. They're trying to do it in a roundabout way where they get us lumped in with fake news because they know that social media will deplatform us if they can successfully do that. So it's kind of a unique approach to cancel culture that they're taking with us, which is in itself an interesting case study.
Well, there's so many examples of cancel culture, but one that I thought was the most ludicrous was Chris Hodges, who pastors the church in the Highlands in Alabama, which is the largest church in the state. They have 40,000 members and many satellite campuses at schools. And Chris was going through his Twitter feed, hitting like on various articles that, when I checked it out, they were just very normal. You know, we can only speculate what they were, but just normal things. And somebody who didn't like him went on. I didn't even know somebody could see what you liked or didn't like, and made this big deal that he was some kind of, you know, he supported the right somehow, and because of that, his church should not be allowed to use schools. And they were actually taken out of several school districts. Now, their church obviously survived. They weren't deplatformed. Chris is a very humble guy. He did not fight back. But I thought, that is so ridiculous. How evil is it to like something that you don't like? And so that's why I'm writing the book is, and really, I think our religious freedoms are really at stake, and people are trying to take them away. And you're right, there is a mob out there, and they're just chipping away at our rights as Christians and as our right as Americans. And a lot of Christians don't take it seriously. You know, we've been losing ground as a Christian community for 50 or maybe even 100 years, back to the 1920s, and I make that case in the book. But I'm just glad that you're out there. I think I'm glad that you're standing up to the bullies. I think that I'm thankful that you, you know, sort of see things humorously from our perspective. And I just hope that people will support you by, you know, downloading your app and buying the merchandise. Some of it's very, very funny that you do. And so that's my opinion.
Well, I appreciate that very much.
But this podcast is with you. So as we wrap this up, why don't I give you the last word?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that you mentioned standing up to the bullies. I think that if cancel culture, if we're going to make a dent in the momentum of cancel culture that's been kind of like sweeping us away in this big wave lately, it's going to result, from my perspective, from people really getting a backbone and deciding, you know, they have something to lose. People have something to lose by speaking their minds. I know that. I realize that if you just speak freely, you could lose your job. If you like the wrong things, you could lose your job. The problem is they can't fire all of us. They can't lay off all of us. You know, people have to be willing. They have to realize that by censoring themselves, they're only giving more power to the bullies. Because that then you're doing the tyrant's work for him, aren't you? When they're trying to shut you up and intimidate you, and through the intimidation, you shut up yourself. They don't even have to do anything at that point if you're silencing yourself. So I think the solution is really just in enough people seeing boldness and bravery, and enough examples where they get emboldened to stand up and fight back against it, and just be vocal about what they believe and why they believe it. And you know, eventually, when people are standing up in large numbers, they lose that power. They're not going to be able to get people out the door on a one-to-one basis anymore. They're going to have a whole army to contend with. So I think that's one of the solutions there, but you know, that's just my two cents.
Very well said. And I want to thank you again for taking time to be on my podcast. I want to thank my listeners for tuning in and sharing this. There are going to be a lot of people that are interested in hearing kind of the inside scoop about the Babylon Bee. And we didn't even make fun of anybody today, did we?
No, but, we didn't.
But as listeners come back and as they share, our numbers are growing. We just passed over 10 million downloads, and I want to thank the listeners for helping us to get to that milestone. So until tomorrow, thank you for listening to The Strang Report on the Charisma Podcast Network. I'm Stephen Strang.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.